Hello and welcome to another episode of Journey to the Rise. I'm your host, Lucretia. In today's episode, we talk with Kelly Brown, a photographer based in Oklahoma. Kelly's journey didn't take her on a straight path to photography. With an interest in the medical industry, she ended up working in the pharmacy world. With a passion for learning, she is open to gathering information on any industry. She ended up pursuing her creative side as a makeup artist. That ended up bringing her towards an interest in photography. With a special heart for people, she found her way into bereavement photography, and we go into the path that has brought her to developing a nonprofit. Kelly has quite the story, so let's get moving with this episode and welcome Kelly Brown with Rose Colored Lens Photography. This is a photographer who uses her skill to capture not only the special moments with family, but also the toughest and most heartbreaking moments with her bereavement sessions. I am so looking forward to hearing about her journey that has allowed families to cherish images of these fleeting moments of life, and they get to cherish them forever. So please welcome Kelly from Rose Colored Lens Photography. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little bit of Texas and then Oklahoma. Just some small town stuff.
Good old small towns.
Yes. I grew up on a farm.
Nice.
Yeah. We had llamas and cows and chickens and stuff.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's a great way to grow up, is surrounded by animals and
it really wholesome. Is. My whole teenage years, I was like, I want to get out of here. I want to live on paved roads. And now I have kids and I'm like, I want a farm.
Right. So growing up on this farm surrounded by really cool animals like llamas, that's amazing. What was, you know, what was it about your childhood or maybe your upbringing that helped you develop into who you are today?
I mean, I think like probably a good amount of the population, I had my own kind of childhood trauma. I had my father pass away when I was 9.
I'm so sorry.
Lots of different child abuse situations happen, and, I ended up moving after he passed away in with my grandma, who is who raised me in Oklahoma. And so I think she really molded and instilled a lot of who I am, really. She was a nurse for about 50 years, and she knows how to care for people. She's amazing, obviously. But yeah, she really impacted and instilled a lot of wonderful things. So I don't know, other than, you know, just having different traumas and stuff, I think it all kind of made me a very empathetic person.
Absolutely. And so after high school, where did life lead you?
Oh gosh, I didn't know anything. Like, when I think about high school Kelly, I'm like, ooh, she was crazy. she's a different person. She was just wanted to travel and wanted to just have fun all the time. She didn't really care a whole lot. But I mean, even that version of me was still very empathetic. So, I mean, she always wanted to be like a psychologist or something in that type of field, or a pharmacist, one of those two things. So,
yeah.
But I went to college and then I dropped out of college and then I went back and then I dropped out again, like all of the things. So I didn't really get it together until I had kids and then I was like, oh, okay. Together. So here I am.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just, that's life. Like, it takes us to different journeys and different pathways. And I think that's what our 20s are for, is just those stumbling blocks and hurdles to help shape us. And
for Definitely. And they were stumbling. That's for
sure. Yeah, I had friends when they turned 30, they were like sobbing at their birthday party, like, I don't want to be 30. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't want to be in my 20s anymore. Like, this learning curve has been miserable. It get really me was. Out.
I was sad when I turned 30, and then I turned 30 and I was like, oh my God, this is way better than my 20s.
Yes. So
I just turned 30 in November. And so I think maybe my 30s are going to be the best ones, hopefully. So.
And they'll just keep getting better from there.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Now I know a little bit about what I'm doing. So I like to get a little bit better and better as we go.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so you're currently in school and you'll graduate with 2 degrees. So what degrees will you have to your name?
So I have a degree, an associate's degree right now. And then I'm working towards my bachelor's, and it was supposed to be... I was supposed to be in pharmacy because that's what I wanted to do. But now that I'm starting a nonprofit, I think maybe I should rethink and do something more business oriented.
Yeah.
So I'm actually having an educational crisis right now about what I should do and what I shouldn't do. But yeah, I'm still working on it. I think I'm going to have to take this semester off just with all of the nonprofit stuff that I'm trying to do. But next semester I will be, I don't want to overwhelm myself. I would like to, I don't know, keep the momentum going and not be set back and then have to really fight my way back to the point where I already was.
Right.
So yeah, I think I'm going to start school next semester, and hopefully that's enough time to figure out.
Yeah, because your plan, from what I right, and because I saw in your social media, your plan was to go off for pharmacy school, and I wondered with the nonprofit, which we're going to get into details in a bit, if maybe that was kind of swaying you from you know one particular, because life does that, right? It's like you think we're gonna, this is what we're gonna be, it's gonna be great, all of a sudden you're like, hold on.
Yeah, it really does. I initially picked up my camera to pay for pharmacy school. And so now I'm like, maybe I want to do photography, and maybe I want to do this nonprofit, and then I want school to kind of go with that instead. So yeah, it definitely shifted a lot of stuff for me. I don't know. Everything is not how I initially planned it. So that's why I'm having like a little crisis. I'm like, wait, what do I want to do now? Because it's not what I've always thought I would be. So
yeah,
it's a little different.
I completely understand. And what was it about being a pharmacist that was so fascinating to you that you, because that's hard. Pharmacy school is really, really hard. But what was the fascination with it?
Honestly, I love the medical field, and if I didn't have to go to medical school to be a doctor, that's probably what I would do. But the first year of medical school, you have to do cadaver related things, and I just don't think that I could do that.
Right.
And I still keep going back and forth. I'm like, are you sure? Like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Keep going back and forth. I don't know. I think all the time about being like a psychiatrist, but they have to go to medical school. And I'm just like, pharmacy is something you don't have to go to medical school for, but you're very much in the medical world. So that was kind of how I landed on that. I've never really necessarily been super passionate about pharmacy, but I do think it's very cool. Like the chemistry of making the medicine and how it responds to what it does in your body and all that stuff. I think that kind of stuff is very interesting. I feel like I said, I could go to school for everything if it was free.
Right. Yeah.
All of the things.
Right.
I think learning is really fun.
Mm-hmm. And I am such an advocate of learning, whether you go off to a university or a YouTube university or just get hands-on experience, like just go
any skill.
Like fill your brain, like just learn something. It's so fun.
Yes, I agree.
And so when, so what made you want to become a photographer? Like what, like how did you learn? How did you teach yourself? Did you take classes? Like where did this, because pharmacy is very science minded.
Yeah.
Photography is very creative and artsy and lighting and, you know, styling. So
it's a lot different from each other for sure.
Yeah.
So I actually did wedding makeup for like 7 years. And that was something that I got into when my daughter was born because I needed to be able to make my own schedule. So it was easy for me to kind of plan for childcare when I needed it versus I couldn't afford putting her like in daycare full time or anything like that. So it just kind of worked for us. And it was just how it happened. And I think when you work in the wedding world, you develop friendships with wedding photographers and other vendors and things like that. And I don't know, they just all kind of, I mean, I understood how makeup was important for the photography product and, you know, they all these different elements kind of came together. And then at the end, like you had this to show everyone, like, look how beautiful this was or whatever. And so I don't know. I had some friends who really encouraged me to just pick up a camera, and so I did. I just was kind of getting burnout doing makeup, and I needed a change, but I still wanted to be able to kind of make my own schedule. And now I have twin toddlers with my daughter, so I really needed to make sure that I could still kind of plan around everything. And so, yeah, I don't know. I was just like, I want to learn how to do this. Maybe it's ADHD. Again, any kind of skill that you can learn, you know, I think it's really cool. I picked up pottery randomly.
Nice.
Like just all kinds of stuff. I'm really drawn to like artsy things. But I'm also very drawn to like science. Not so much math, but it is a part of it.
Yeah.
Science. And, you know, the human body and things like that, the human mind, all of that is super interesting to me. And I think they really do kind of coexist together, art, science. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just how it happened.
Yeah. And how would you describe your photography style?
Well, I'm still trying to find it. That's I don't know. I would say maybe I'm more of like a storyteller type, documenting type candid photographer rather than the posed photography. I also am about to start kind of dabbling in like fine art photography, which is really exciting to me because I love like the Renaissance and Baroque eras of art. Yeah. And so I think it would be really cool if I could make people look like paintings just by learning different lighting and things like that. But yeah, I think it would be predominantly like portrait storytelling type photography.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have more from our guest, Kelly Brown, as she shares how life directed her towards bereavement photography. Imagine walking waist deep in a field of flowers while taking in an endless view of beautiful blue sky and clouds. Stargazer Farms WI is located in northwestern Wisconsin, offering flowers, vegetables, special events, and more. From stargazing parties, you pick a farm stand, to bridal flower parties, flower bars, bridal flower buckets, and a variety of special events like brunch on the farm. Take a moment to escape from the chaos of life. Take a breath on a quiet farm where the breeze can clear your head and the quiet can cleanse your soul. Come find a sense of peace and calm at Stargazer Farms WI. Come for the flowers. Stay for the stars. To find out more, go to www.stargazerfarmswi.com. And for long form content, check out their YouTube channel at Stargazer Farms WI. Welcome back to Journey to the Rise. We continue our conversation with Kelly, and she shares about the challenges she faces with bereavement photography.
Yeah, when you get into that art side, the Baroque side, like that's when you really start paying attention to light. A friend of mine is a ceramic artist. Her name is Sherry, and she's amazing. And her and I were talking one day, and she's like, started going into that whole aspect. And I started really looking at that type of art. Mm-hmm. And it's really fascinating how you start seeing crazy. Light. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be really fun. It's going to be, I don't know, it's just fun to learn new things. So I'm really excited to try.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what comes out from your exploration in that area. Now, how did you first start finding your photography clients?
Well, like I said, I did makeup for a long time. So not all of them, but a lot of the people that are my photography clients were also my makeup clients. Or they knew me because I did makeup, and then maybe they hadn't booked me for makeup, but that's how they knew me. And so I don't know, it just kind of happened. I don't know how or why. I remember thinking, like, in that first year, like, why are people even booking me? Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. This is crazy. But it really took off for me, and it's obviously continued to do so. So yeah. I'm grateful for that. Yeah.
Absolutely. And what challenges have you faced as you've been building your business? Because it's pretty new. It's what, 2 years old, a year old?
Yeah, it's about 2 years old. This is my second year still. So the challenges, I think, have been knowing my own limits, not overbooking myself.
Yeah.
Learning how to ask for help.
That's a tough one.
It's really a tough one. Yeah, I need... I don't know. I'm still trying to find like a groove of like how many clients per week can I have and how many do I need to have to be able to finish like editing sessions and
right.
and things like that. Editing is like a huge part of what you do, and it takes so much time. And so just trying to find a balance between that and then still being able to shower and
right.
remembering to eat something and spending time with my kids, you know, they all have their own little extracurricular stuff that they do, and school's starting again. And I'm just like, you know, trying to find balance. Work-life balance, I think, is the hardest because when you own your own business, you really are working 24/7 instead of just, you know, leaving the office at 5. So,
Yeah.
Work-life balance, because I don't have that, but I'm hoping to, I'm working on it. So,
yeah. People who have W-2 jobs don't realize that those who are 1099 and business owners, when we sit down and it's 8 o'clock and we're watching Netflix, our brain is like, you know, there's that one thing you could go work on.
Yeah.
Oh, what about this idea that you had that you wanted to pursue? Wait a minute. Your brain just goes and goes.
Yes. Not only that, but like when I am taking like a break or like I'm off work for the night or whatever, there's always somebody in my inbox and I feel guilty posting or interacting with people on social media or something because I don't want them to think I'm ignoring them. But
right.
I'm just not at work right now.
Right. Yeah.
I just need a brain break.
Right. Boundaries. It's the boundaries of business so that you can have that harmony between work and life. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's difficult for me too is that I wasn't expecting any of this to happen. So I didn't really build a solid like foundation, like a website and questionnaires. And I mean, I was working on things like that, but it wasn't done yet. And so when it sort of blew up, I was like, oh God, like I have just floods of emails and instant messages and direct messages. And I'm just like, oh my God, like I was not built for this. Like,
right.
So, That's going to be different for the nonprofit, which is why it's so pricey to start it out, because I'm definitely building the right foundation this time so that it can sustain.
Right. Yeah. People don't realize, especially with photographers, it's this 80-20 rule. 20% you're out taking the photos, doing the sessions, interacting with people. That's when you're seeing. 80% is editing, marketing, doing business, the accounting.
It's so much.
Yeah.
It's so much. Yeah. It's a lot. And I knew a little bit about running business because of my makeup, but it is not the same.
Correct.
I mean, it is, but it's different.
Right.
It's definitely a lot more work. than makeup was, because, you know, I was done after I finished. So
yeah, you sanitize your brushes and your gear, and you pack up and you go.
Yeah, the at-home process for that was a lot less than the at-home process of work for photography after.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a work-life balance. I'm gonna figure it out.
And you photograph families, boudoir. I saw some really fun flower sessions. Do you have a favorite genre?
I think that just portraits in general are probably my favorite, but I gravitate really heavily towards just really emotionally charged moments. And a lot of that, when I first started, had a lot more to do with women empowerment. So that's kind of what started the flower top sessions that you're talking about. That was the first session that I did when I first started that I was like, oh my God, I think I love photography, because it was just so amazing to watch someone come in who hasn't done anything for themselves in a long time. You know, is fighting all of these insecurities and stuff, and they come in and you just have them hold a giant bouquet of flowers, and, you know, they can cover whatever they want on themselves, and, you know, nobody's looks bad with flowers.
Right. Right.
And they kind of are able to see, like, oh my God, I am cute. Like, I do look pretty. I love this. And they got more confident, and a lot of them cried and all kinds of stuff. And it went from that to, I did some bath boudoir sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And those were really intimate as well. They weren't necessarily traditional boudoir sessions. They were more like from the female gaze. And we did some like exercises, talking to ourselves in the mirror, hugging ourselves. Like, it was all about like kind of loving yourself and forgiving yourself and stuff like that. And so a lot of those women cried too. And then they saw how magical they looked. And I was like, I didn't do anything. That's just what you look like.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what I feel drawn to, is just having people realize that they're actually a lot cuter than they think they are.
Yeah.
And but, you know, I obviously do other very emotionally charged photography.
Right. Right. You and know, that's the thing.
Like that.
And that's the thing with like boudoir and modern glamour session, contemporary glamour sessions, and those empowerment moments, is we as women are so hard on ourselves, and we've heard the negative voices. I know I have heard my share, and that's what sticks with us. That's what carries with us. And we can recognize beauty in somebody else, but we look at the mirror, we're like, oh, no, not today.
Yes.
And it's like, what are you talking about? And I totally understand when you have that client and they get done with hair and makeup, and you show them the back of the camera, and they're like, oh my God, I'm beautiful. The makeup artist is like, no, don't cry. I have to redo your makeup.
Yeah. It's really amazing to be able to show someone what they look like to everyone else, because I mean, body dysmorphia is a monster, and it's really hard to know what you look like, you know, mm-hmm. and your insecurities when you look in the mirror, that's all you see. And I think I focus on women empowerment because, you know, women are the ones that have that kind of outward expectations rather than the physical, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if there was men interested, I would do them too. But yeah, I focus on women, especially moms. You know, it's hard to feel cute after, you know, postpartum does a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
A mom, you're tired.
Yes. And if I can't feel cute, it's not my season yet, but it's going to be yours. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some beautiful mamas out there, but they're just tired. They need like a good old 12-hour nap.
Definitely. If I got even 6 hours, I would be like, wow, I'm a new person.
Yeah. And with your work, you started to drift into this very sensitive area. How did you get started with bereavement sessions?
Oh, so I didn't mean to do it. It wasn't something that I went out and searched for. I didn't even know it existed. And I am sure that I am not the first person to do it. I'm sure there's tons of photographers out there that have done it. I think I really wanted to get into birth photography. And there was a mom who reached out to me after I had shared something talking about like I wanted to get into birth photography. And she was like, "We're trying to get pregnant. I would love for you to be our photographer for that." And I was like, "I would be honored. I want to do this. That's amazing." And she had an infertility journey, so it was probably like over a year or so that she was trying to get pregnant. She would get pregnant and then it didn't work out. And so it was a whole thing. And she was updating me all the time. And she got pregnant and it stuck. And I was so happy for her. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing. You deserve this." And she has a son. I want to say he's around like 4, 5, something. I could be wrong. I don't know. But he's younger. And they've just been trying for a while to give him a sibling. And so we talked about prices. We talked about, having an appointment so that we could go over details on what her birth plan is and where is she having the baby, all the details of the shots that she wants and all the stuff, because I wanted her to be comfortable with me. I didn't know her previously. And so the appointment time kind of came and went, and then I didn't hear from her, and so I just kind of left it alone. And then her friend reached out to me and was like, "Hey, are you still interested in doing this session?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely. Like this is all the things that we discussed. Is that still okay?" And she was like, "Well, he's going to be born tonight, and it's going to be a stillbirth.
Oh no.
Would you still do it?" And I was like, "Of course."
Right.
I had to sit down and I was like, "Oh my God, that is gonna be really difficult, but like I can't say no, there's no way that I could say no to that." And so I had no idea what I was doing. I'd never done anything like that before. It was 3 a.m. I
Oh my
have
gosh.
no idea. Yeah, she messaged me hours before talking about it and then just said, "We can call you when she goes into labor." It was supposed to still be like a birth photography. It was just obviously different. And so when she went into labor, they called me and I went up there and I had no idea. I had no idea what I was walking into. And, I asked the nurses, like, "Is there anything, you got any advice?" And they were like, "You're gonna do great." And I was like, "Okay, great." I think about them a lot and I'm mad at them a little bit because I wish they would have told me literally anything, but they were just like,
Besides, you'll do awesome. There's the door.
"Yeah." And I was like, "Okay, awesome. Like, no details, no. If this happens, say this or do this or anything." There was no preparation. And so I wish that somebody would have said something helpful because I really had no idea. And I walked in and it all was just, it was one of the most difficult things that I've ever seen in my entire life. I've never, and again, I didn't know because I'd never gone through any of this. I personally haven't been through anything like that. My grandmother had a stillbirth, but I wasn't even born, so I don't know. Of course, she's told me about it, and she was kind of my biggest like supporter. When I told her, she said, "Oh my God, you have to do it." And so she was probably one of the biggest reasons why I even did it. But I just had no idea what the protocol was. I mean, everybody in there, the nurses and everyone, they knew what to say and what to do.
Right.
And I just had no idea the type of mental, I don't know. It was just a crazy, bizarre experience to witness someone trying to grapple with, oh my gosh, he's beautiful. I love him. Look at these little toes. Oh my gosh, he has your nose. He has this, he has this. And then understand that he's not coming home.
Right.
And then kind of slip back into that, like, oh my gosh, he's so beautiful. Oh, I love him so much. Oh, he's so tall. Like all of these different things. And then there would be like kind of another crack and the reality would start to sort of seep back in. And it was just, I mean, afterwards, I spoke with a few different medical people and did some research, and everything that I was saying and how I was reacting and everything was actually exactly what I was supposed to do. But I had no idea what I was doing. And I think it was just sort of, I mean, I was just supposed to do it. You know, mm-hmm. I just felt very right. It was very natural to be like, oh, he's so beautiful, you know, to compliment the little details that I noticed. And it was so easy to love on everybody in there. It was so easy to just be human, you know. Right. That's essentially what it was. It was just, I saw someone who needed comfort and who needed something that I was able to provide them. And so, you know, you just do it. I don't know. I felt very strange when my stuff started going viral and people were telling me that I was amazing and stuff. And I was like, I feel like most of you guys would have done the same thing if you were like, I'm going viral for just being a normal person. I feel like I just, I don't know. I think it was just natural. It's just something that happened. And that was the first time that I ever, found out what end of life or bereavement photography was. I didn't even know that that was a thing.
Yeah.
And the way that she responded to the photos, and even still, and her family and her friends, it sort of gave me a completely different perspective in what type of impact this has on mental health and on the grieving process, and how amazing it is and it went from me being completely terrified, which I think probably I get nervous before almost every session regardless, but I was terrified, and then I just had to trust myself, and I did. And it turned into something that was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can do this, to, oh my gosh, what an honor. Right. Like, it was an indescribable, difficult, beautiful experience. And it really made like a whole new path for me. And word of mouth traveled around, and I've done multiple stillbirth sessions now. And families got to take that home with them, you know? So right. I think that's amazing. I've done dogs who have to be put down. I've done hospice care, great great grandmas with their families. And then the one that went viral was a mother who had terminal cancer, and it was with her daughters. So, yeah, anytime I see, because it's not really something you can advertise, you know.
Right, yeah.
But anytime I see, like, someone talk about, you know, their family member or something, I always reach out and ask them, you know, would you like pictures? And, you know, I don't charge for them, so... it's not like I'm saying, hey,
right. That's you want really generous
give
of you.
Me money and I'll give you pictures during one of the worst times of your life.
Right.
I just offer it, and sometimes they don't take it, and sometimes they do. But I just feel very called to make sure that they know that they can if they decide to. Some people don't want to because the types of machine or a state of the person that's going through everything is, sometimes they just aren't interested in that, and that's okay too. But sometimes they are, and the ones that are, I get overwhelming, you know, gratitude back, and I feel like that's so much better than money anyway. So yeah, that's kind of how I got started.
And I don't think just anyone could do what you do. Like, it's hard.
Like, it's very hard.
It's, and not everyone has the level of compassion, patience, willingness, you know, to step into that very difficult situation. And that child is very much part of their life. And that's absolutely heartbreaking that they don't get to take it home. That's the whole excitement of building this life. And now they have to say goodbye. But that child, it's you going in and photographing these very heartbreaking, just devastating moments. It allows healing and it allows them to take what it was lost. They still get to carry it with them because that child's very much part of their life and was. Mm-hmm. So you give them such a gift. And I think you sell yourself a little short by saying anyone can do it. And I don't, definitely not.
Well, I appreciate it. I don't know. I'm a very emotional person, very empathetic person. I mean, I can cry over, if I think about anything hard enough, I can cry about it. So, to me, I just thought like this would never be something, like if you were going to tell me that this was going to be my niche or something that like I go viral for, I would have been like, you're lying, because I'm not interested in that. I would be destroyed. And I am, you know, I mean, in the moments, it is absolutely earth shattering. I mean, it's very difficult, and I don't know how to compartmentalize that.
Right.
I don't know that I would if I knew how either, because I think that they deserve to have someone grieve with them. And at the beginning I thought, oh my God, how am I going to do this and be professional? And what does that even look like?
Right.
Is professional, like, what does that mean in this, in this type of photography? And I felt like I would feel really guilty if I cried because it's not happening to me. But I mean, I've cried at every single session because it's sad. Yeah. And every single session that I've done that I've cried at, they were able to look at me and say, thank you for grieving with me. Right. And that's what I mean when I say I think it was easy, is because it's just a human response to something devastating happening. And, you know, you're working together to try to find and create beauty in those last moments. And I think after seeing the type of positive impact that it's had on the family's abilities to not completely lose their minds. You know, they have something tangible that they can look back on. And photography is so special in a way that, you know, even when I edit, I can look at the photos and I remember the sound of their laugh when I took that. I can remember the jokes that were being told. I remember the stories they were talking about. You know, you kind of relive that whole moment whenever you look at these photos. And I think that's what's so important about the documenting storytelling style of them as well. And I think that's what made it so impactful. And I don't know. I just think it's rewired my whole brain. Like my whole brain chemistry is different, and it really changed how I look at, I mean, death is still really difficult. It's not like I'm not some crazy anomaly that just can look at death and be like, how beautiful, let me take a picture of this. Like,
right. Yeah.
I'm not. I cry when I see roadkill. Like,
right. Right.
It is devastating to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like I am better than anyone and I can handle death better. I still grieve just like everyone else does. I just think being able to think of it differently and embrace it rather than never talking about it and it being like a no talking subject, like we don't discuss this.
Right.
I think being able to discuss things like that and being able to open the conversation and all of that would help normalize things like this. And I think these should be everywhere, not just me taking them, but, you know, every hospice center, every cancer hospital, every, you know, birthing unit, every, anything like that. I mean, everyone should have the opportunity, and I do them for free because everyone should have that, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you make. I think everyone should be able to have access to something like that. And I hope I figure out how to get it there. I want it to be something that's everywhere and everyone just wakes up and is like, oh, this is a normal thing that happens.
Right.
Because it should be.
Yeah. And I think compartmentalizing emotions and repressing emotions comes out later in an ugly way. So I think having that emotion and the willingness to let it out is also healing, not for just you, because you're experiencing this, not to their level, but you're experiencing, you know, this heartbreak alongside them.
Mm-hmm.
But the gift you're giving them is a piece of their history.
Yeah.
Where we preserve our lives through photography. Like people, I think in the world of the selfies, like, oh my God, selfie duck face. You know, it's, we lose the fact that, and not everyone, a lot of people still value photography and have the images hung in frames on their walls, but it's the number one thing that we want in tragedy, tornadoes, fires, you know, water, the photos.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I lost the photos. Everything else can be replaced. Oh my God, I lost the photos.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is you are being professional by expressing that emotion. I think if you went in a little too harsh, you wouldn't bring that human element. And I think that's why people are drawn to you. And I think maybe that's why God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, is directing you because of your ability to let that guard down and to be professional by being human and letting them know, like, it's okay to cry.
Yeah.
This
if
is
you
a-
needed someone to remind you, it would be me. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt very much like this is just divine timing. I mean, I, again, would never have chosen this for myself, but I really do feel like, and there's a lot of people that commented on the viral post and they were saying, you know, people have asked me to do this, but I just told them no, because I am just way too emotional for that. But now I see this and I'm reading that you're also very emotional. Maybe I should do things like this. And I think that the people who are like me, like, that's exactly what you need to be doing, because I don't know. I think I've never had a stillbirth. I've never had, you know, someone with terminal cancer, you know, I've never gone through a lot of the things that I've photographed. But I do know what pain feels like.
Mm-hmm.
I know what loss feels like, and I can empathize with people. And I just think that if you can empathize with another human, that's the kind of work that you need to be doing. That's the kind of art that you need to be creating, you know? And I just think I mean, I would love for it to pay my bills, but, of course. You know, it really is just, it's the most fulfilling thing I've ever done with therapy though. Right. But it is the most fulfilling thing that I've ever done. I mean, I feel like they are the most beautiful pictures I've ever taken, in my opinion, just because of the impact and the type of rawness that's in them. I just think those moments are absolutely priceless. And I don't know, I just hope it encourages other people to do things like that, because it is so important.
I think it's better to have someone in that situation who is more in touch with their emotions and someone who's a little bit more thick-skinned.
Yeah, just that's because what my grandma tried to tell me when I was talking to her. She was like, I would rather have someone cry with me than to just be like, okay, do you need anything else? Or can I
leave? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily like, you know, I just let the moments play out. And then I'm just kind of uncomfortable in the corner feeling like I should hide instead of.
Right.
But you know, those end up being like the most intimate pictures are the prettiest ones, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I go in there and I direct anyone or anything. I just kind of let them do their thing, and I just make comments when I feel like maybe they need to hear something.
Yeah.
Or if they talk to me, you know. I don't know. I've been very blessed and have had very respectful and beautiful clients as far as end of life and bereavement sessions go. So I don't have a bad experience, I guess, to compare it to, but you know, everyone is just grieving and I'm just there. So,
right. You're, I guess, part of the healing process.
That, don't worry about trying to pose anyone or anything. You just are there experiencing it with them. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a portrait session. It's there just taking in the moment.
Right.
And for someone who's considering a bereavement session, but maybe they think it's going to be too painful, like, what would you say to them to encourage them to go forward with a photo session of that nature?
So I get several people who they want to do something like that, but their parent or grandparent or whoever doesn't want to do it because, you know, that's not how they want people to remember them. And I can completely understand and empathize with that.
Yeah.
I just feel like regardless if you look like you did 20 years ago, or if you look, you know, like you did even a year ago, you know, before you started treatment or whatever, I think being able to leave your family something tangible from your last few days on earth,
mm-hmm,
is, no matter what you look like, they're not going to care about that. You know, it's going to mean so much to them, and it's not going to devalue anything if your hair's not fixed how you want it, or you're skinnier now than you used to be, or you have IVs or whatever, you know, it's not going to make a difference to them. They're still going to be able to see, you know, all of the crevices in your hands when you're holding their hand, and the wrinkles in your eyes when you're laughing with them, and or even just the shadows on your face in those days, you know, things that they really need to hold on to get through those moments when you're not here anymore. I call them kind of like, they remind me of like love letters, like you're leaving for your family.
Yeah.
Because it really is details of yourself that otherwise they wouldn't have. And most of them, I mean, you don't really get, memory is cruel, you know, it doesn't let you remember things completely. And I think that's why photography is so important. So I think, I mean, and I've unfortunately photographed people who didn't know that those were their last photos, you know, and I just think it's really important. And if you can't do it for yourself, then do it for your family. You know,
yeah.
I think, I mean, I'm hoping that, you know, if this nonprofit goes the way that I am dreaming,
and it then will.
I will have, you know, it everywhere. And I'll be able to hire and bring in different photographers. I'll train everybody, and you know, you'll have someone in there with you taking these photos, and you're not going to have to feel weird and uncomfortable, because I think that's my number one thing that people say to me is, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry that you're taking photos like this. And I'm like, please don't apologize to me for that. Like, I'm here with you. You know, I'm not doing this because I don't know, because I hate myself or I'm doing this because I love people, and I think that you deserve to have these, and I am choosing to be here with you and experience this with you. And I think that is one of the biggest reasons that people don't ask, is because they're like, I know this is really weird, I'm sorry to ask this, but would you be open to taking pictures like this? If somebody has done it, they already know, you know? And if my nonprofit works out, then everybody that you talk to will already either know, or they will have already been trained, and like, they know what to expect, and they're doing it because their heart is in it. And that is, that is probably the biggest thing. If somebody's going to agree to do a bereavement session for you, it's because their heart is in it. Otherwise they'll say no. So don't worry about that. And I think that regardless if you are terminally ill or not, just take the pictures. Period.
And I get where people say like, oh, I don't want to be remembered this way, but your family sees the memories. They see you as the incredible and very special person that you are to them. A photographer once told me how he had a favorite aunt. He loved her. He adored her. And she hated having her photo taken. And he's a photographer. So he wanted a nice photo. And he said every single photo he had ever seen of her, she had her hand up in front of her face. And then she passed away. And it's her funeral. And they have no photos of her. And he's like, she was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I don't have a photo of my most favorite person that was on this planet.
That's how my great-grandma was. It's really sad. And I think a lot of that is, you know, sometimes you have to have a little ego death before the actual death. You've got to just accept, this is the way things are. This is how I look. And at the end of the day, they're not going to be looking back on those pictures thinking, oh my God, look at her nose, or look at her skin, whatever. They're going to be like, oh my God, I'm so happy I have this.
Yes.
Look, did you remember her nails were pink? Or did you remember, you know, look at her smile, and you remember the joke she was telling when she took this, you know, stuff like that. And so I don't know. I really hope that this becomes something normalized.
Right.
And that it can help everyone with the process of accepting, and I don't know, trying to grieve the whole process. Yeah. It's a lot, and it's more than just photos that you need, you know, to go through things like this. But I think it's a very good tool to have for sure.
And those photos, they stem up the conversations of the memories. Like, oh my gosh, do you remember when Papa, when he was at the nursing home and he just didn't want to be there, and he got in his little wheelie chair and he went four wheeling on this trail and we had to go get him, you know, like silly, like that's what those photos are going to remember. I remember when Papa used to take me fishing, or when Grandma would always bake the cookies, but she would never tell Mom we had cookies till Mom left, and then we all got the cookies. That's what those photos are going to do that you're taking. So I hope that there is someone out there who's like, I don't want to be remembered this way. You're helping them remember the memories.
Exactly. Exactly. And I didn't even realize that until it was already happening. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty special. And if there's like a photographer who is interested in getting started with bereavement sessions, what kind of tips or advice would you have for them?
I would t- tell them to get a therapist if they don't already have one. I would tell them to do some research, you know, reach out to maybe someone you know has done them before, ask questions, you know, depending on what type of session it is, maybe it's someone in hospice. And so you would maybe call a hospice center and be like, I know this might be strange, but I have some questions. You know, how does this work? What is life like in here? What can I expect? Because I think the worst thing is going into it completely blind. And then you just being like, oh my God, what am I looking at right now? You know? So I think maybe if you go to a hospital or go to call somebody something, but maybe you have a friend who delivers babies and she's seen all of the things before, and maybe ask them, you know, I would definitely do some research. I would definitely speak to people who are in that scope of, you know, whatever type of bereavement it is. And you'd be surprised how many people are willing to talk to you and tell you, because I mean, there is more good in the world than bad, and people at the end of the day, they will encourage you and try to help you, because what you're doing is wonderful and it is important. So, you know, definitely get a therapist. Definitely, you know, I think talking to the family, you know, not all the time do I get to have time with the clients before we take pictures. Rebecca was the mom with cancer, and her two daughters that went viral on that post. I did her makeup before, and we got to do client closet try-ons and things like that. So I got to spend some time with her before I actually got to take her photos, which was nice. Most of the time that doesn't happen, and you just are kind of there. But if there's any time that you can even have like a small conversation through messages, or you know, death is very sudden sometimes, so it's not like you can exactly plan for anything, but you know, anything that you need to know, sometimes family dynamic is important, you know, especially when they're in that time of grief, like maybe this is a step parent and they don't get along, don't call them mom or dad, you know, things like that. If there's anything that you might need to know to make them the most comfortable, I would definitely think about that. And then I would also say, if you are doing photos of somebody in hospice or who has cancer or something like that, that you should also talk to someone about what their limits are. Because, you know, what a nightmare that would be.
Yeah.
If you were out in a field somewhere taking photos and they just collapse, and it's just you and the person that's collapsed.
Right.
You need to know their limits, and you have to get some information to decide what is the best place for them to be. Is it an indoor session? Is it an outdoor session? Don't ever go anywhere by yourself with them. Make sure you have helpers. Maybe they want to do outside, but you need to make sure you've got a chair for them to sit, and bring an ice chest with waters and, you know, things like that. Knowing what symptoms to look for, like maybe we should sit down, let's finish these in the shade, you know, things like that. There's a lot that goes into it. But yeah, I would just do your due diligence. Don't just rush in and don't do what I did. Don't just rush in. I mean, definitely be careful. You're responsible for these people's last love notes for their family. So you want to do them as best you can, but you also don't want to sacrifice their safety. So
yeah,
that would be my advice.
It's excellent advice.
And if my nonprofit works out, then we can talk about it in training.
It will work out. And, speaking of, these sessions have guided you to start this nonprofit. What has that process been like for you? And what is the mission behind your new organization?
It has been an insane process, to be honest. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm figuring it out. I'm learning all the rules. I've got fundraisers planned and things like that. I've got a small board member thing going on, and I've got two licensed professional grief counselors that are going to be volunteering to help everyone who works with me and then also the clients and their families, and then also be able to provide resources for the families and stuff, which is amazing. And that was the number one thing. Like, if I was going to do this, then I wanted to make sure I had like mental health care for everyone, because it's very taxing to do that and then not have money for therapy afterwards.
Right.
So that's amazing. And I'm so excited to have them on board. I have a lot to do still. It's still in the early processes, so it's still being filed and things like that. So I'm not an official nonprofit yet, but whenever, hopefully within a month, I think is whenever everything will be done. And then I will officially have a 501c3.
Excellent.
And if everything works accordingly, then I will have Rose Colored Lens Foundation and hospitals and hospice centers and birthing units all around. And wow. It'll be amazing. And I hope that happens for everyone, you know. Yeah.
So you're wanting to take it not just there in Oklahoma, you really want to take this beyond.
Yes, I really do. I don't, initially when I thought about doing it, I was like, I would just like to be able to do this and also buy groceries. I don't charge for them. And, right. But I have so many that want to do them. And I have a lot of people who want me to travel to other states and things like that to do them. And, I think that that's wonderful, but also that's not free, you know?
Right, right.
So initially I'm not a greedy person or like a very overly ambitious person. So that's not what I was looking for in the beginning, but like I said, this all changes your perspective so much. Mm-hmm. At first I was just like, I just want to be able to, you know, pay for my daughter's cheer
right?
and buy groceries. Like, I don't need to do all of that. But, and even still, that's my goal. But I also think this is something that everyone should have access to.
Right.
And there are other nonprofits out there that do something similar, but they stick to, the stillbirth type of side of things. And I think that's wonderful. But mine is different. Mm-hmm. And I think that, young and old, like everyone should have the access to something like this. And, you know, I don't know all of the details quite yet. We have yet to have our first board member meeting and things, to decide all of those things, and I obviously have to have the funds to be able to expand and
right
and all of that stuff. Yeah. So you know, but I am accepting board member applications and things like that. So I hope it's everywhere, just for the sake of want this to make an impact. I want everyone to just be normal. Like I said, like if you're, you know, your mom and you don't have any pictures of her, you know, I want you to be able to go, oh, thank God that foundation works for her hospice unit or whatever, you know, right. And then you would be able to put in an application and somebody would come to your house and take pictures of you and your mom.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just want it to be something that everyone has access to, whether or not they are low income or otherwise. I just think it's just something that should be normal. It's something that everyone should expect for the sake of mental health. And I think mental health should be taken very seriously.
Absolutely.
And it's just one, you know, there's a thousand ways that it needs to be improved, obviously, mm-hmm. but this is the one thing that I know I can do. And so I hope I get the opportunity to do that.
And even if it was donation based or pay what you can type of a system, because you still have to have like, and I appreciate, you know, you're like, I just want to pay groceries and maybe a little, you deserve to have a sustainable living. And we will chat more about that when we get off this. But I agree, like, it should be accessible to everyone, but photographers have gifts and talents, and cameras are not free, and fuel is expensive. And, and so I hope, with your board members, there's a way to help with offsetting some of those costs, so it can be affordable for everyone. Yeah,
I would like it. I mean, ideally it's free for everyone. And then I'm also, you know, it's just really successful and all of our fundraisers go super well and I am able to pay my bills.
Yes.
And maybe also, you know, buy myself something nice every now and again. I don't know, but, you know, pay off my car or something. I don't know. But, you know, take a trip maybe. I don't know. Yes. Have an actual vacation. I don't know. That'd be
crazy, but... Have some downtime. Enjoy some time off. Exactly. Have a vehicle that... Have
an assistant.
Yes.
But yeah, the first year I know I'm going to be doing a lot of the legwork by myself. And it's going to be not fun for a little bit. But I feel like it's for a really good cause. And I feel really passionate about what it does for people, so hopefully that keeps me going.
Yes.
When I'm overwhelmed.
When you're overwhelmed, just message me. I will be there to be the shoulder for you to lean on when you need it, so don't ever be shy about reaching out.
Be sorry for saying
that. I'm telling you, if you have my number, reach out to me. Dead serious. Yes.
Thank you.
And you've gotten well-deserved media attention for regarding these sessions and your skills as a photographer and your new nonprofit. How has life been for you? How has business been? How has your personal life been? How tired are you?
I don't think that there's a word that can describe the amount of tired. I am very tired. I won't lie. You know, it is beautiful. It is, you know, abundant and wonderful. And I feel very lucky to have any platform at all and any, you know, anybody listening to anything I have to say. So it is very beautiful. It is very surreal and odd to me because I think, are you sure? Like, it's very strange. And then imposter syndrome, obviously, is a huge thing that happens a lot. Like, you know, there's so many talented photographers. Why am I the one that's viral, you know? And then going viral is scary in itself because I was scared that people were going to troll me and maybe not agree with bereavement photography and things like that. But everyone was so kind and
good.
Everyone was so sweet and welcoming. And it was just, it was overwhelming, but it was so beautiful. And I really loved, I mean, I haven't read all of the comments. There's a lot of comments, but I have read a lot of them and I just bawled like a baby. I was like, wow, this is amazing to be seen in the way that I intended to be seen. Like, I mean, that's every artist's dream, really, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And for my art to be perceived in the way that I intended. I mean, it's the most incredible feeling ever. And I just think, I don't know, getting attention is very weird for me. Going on like the news is very weird for me. Yeah. Doing things like this is very strange. I'm like, I don't really have anything fun to say. my daughter was like, my first news thing, she was like, are you crying? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, why? And I was like, well, I don't know if you know this, but the reason why I'm being interviewed is for something that's kind of sad. So
I scream
about sad stuff. Sorry.
Yeah.
But I'm having a whole like, this is amazing. And then, oh my God, what do? I don't know what I'm doing. And then, I have all of these wonderful ideas. I can't wait to do these and like share with everyone. And then, are you sure you should be the one to do that? Like, you should probably hire someone else to do that because you don't know what you're doing. And I don't know, it's just a back and forth thing. It's been very overwhelming, but a very wonderful roller coaster.
Yeah.
I don't plan on jumping off of it yet.
Good.
but it is a roller coaster nonetheless.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Buckle up. I think the ride for you has just begun.
That is both scary and exciting to hear.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I noticed you had a post that stated that you are booked for the rest of the year.
I am.
Congratulations.
I am. I closed my books for the rest of the year. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, if bereavement sessions come up that I won't make time to try to do those. But yeah, for the rest of the year, I am booked.
That has to feel incredible.
It does. It's also very scary because you don't have sick days. I can't reschedule you for the rest of the year.
Right. So
it's kind of scary, but it is very exciting. And it's, again, are you sure? What you want to book me? Okay.
Yeah.
Of course
so, you do.
Yeah. I'm having a hard time with the imposter syndrome a lot lately, just because it's so much attention and I'm not someone who enjoys or knows how to enjoy attention, I should say.
Yeah.
But I am working on it. So.
Photographers tend to be on the other side of the
exactly.
lens.
Seeing myself on interviews and stuff, I'm like, ooh, that's weird. That's weird. Is that what my voice sounds like? Awesome. So, I don't know. It's just been a very surreal experience for sure.
Yeah.
I have no other way to explain it other than it's very cool and very weird.
It's amazing. Well, I don't know a photographer who wouldn't dream of having 6 months out booked. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm very proud of you. It's a
Thank
good job.
You.
Yes. And what's ahead for you in the upcoming year and clearly 2025?
Well, honestly, I haven't thought that far. but, you know, in November and December, I am hoping that all of my nonprofit stuff is done. And then I have some fundraisers planned, some events that I would like to hold. And so I'm hoping that I can start, you know, doing nonprofit stuff as well, instead of just my photography stuff, do kind of both and try to figure out a good balance between those things. I think it would be really cool if those went amazing, and then maybe I start to expand into other states and then hold fundraisers there and you know, keep going and doing things like that. But you know, I'm starting off small.
Right.
Hopefully building a really solid foundation with you know, making a really solid website and hiring a nonprofit lawyer and all the things, doing all the things the right way. So if I am able to expand and be bigger than I ever dreamed, then I will be able to sustain all of the attention.
Absolutely.
Because that is not what happened when I was viral. So hopefully I've fixed all the bugs in my processes. And so hopefully it will all go really well. But I feel excited and really good about everything.
Yeah, which you should. It seems like a higher power is directing you, saying, pharmacy school, go this way.
Yeah, exactly. It's nothing
roadblock.
I would be doing, but it is happening, and it feels right, which is strange, but
yeah,
you really do have to. It's true. You have to let go of what you have planned, and and yeah, it feels very divine. So definitely.
If anyone wants to work with you, start booking with you for 2025, find out more about this nonprofit, join in the Calvary, how can they find you?
So you can find me on Facebook. I also have Instagram. It's a little sad though, because I just made it and I'm not very good at Instagram yet. But if otherwise, I have a website and it is rosecoloredlensphoto.com. And on there is an area that talks about the foundation. There are parts that you can request appointments, and then also a board member application if you're interested in doing that, in donations. And soon, hopefully, I will have merch that people can buy too.
Nice.
I've made new t-shirts. So
very cool.
That'll be fun. But
yeah.
Yeah, all of that information I think would be easily found on my website, or you could find me on Facebook or Instagram and send me a message. Whatever comes first.
Well,
and if
I
just want to do, I'm so sorry.
No,
if
go
you
ahead.
Just want to do like volunteer work or something like that, then there is just like a contact button. Good. And then you can tell me your information and what you'd like to volunteer doing, whether it's photography or you just want to run t-shirt sales.
Yeah.
At the next fundraiser or something. Right. You know, stuff like that.
Well, I am so excited. A friend of mine had, I was over at her house and she's like, oh, you should check out this photographer. I found her on Facebook. And as she was scrolling, that's when she saw you did bereavement. She's like, oh my gosh, you should do this. And so that's how I found you. And I am so grateful for that connection. And I am absolutely loving what you're doing. I love to see that you have gone viral. And I love seeing that you are following that divine intervention and seeing where it will take you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And yes. I hope that you take the pictures. Maybe it gets you into bereavement photography.
Yeah.
It would be, it's hard, but you know, maybe you want to work with me one day.
Well, that was what she told me. She's like, I think this is something you should do. And I'm like, I think it would be too hard. And she's like, well, I think you should think about it.
You sound like the perfect person to do it.
You're very kind. But I appreciate your times. I know you are crazy busy, but I love all of the success that's coming to you and it's going to continue to come to you. And I definitely want to have you on as a guest again one day to see where you have flourished and where things have taken you.
Awesome. I can't wait. Thank you.
That's it with Kelly Brown of Rhodes Colored Lens Photography. Next week, we talk with sign language interpreter and author Sharon Barnes.
It's a journey. And like I said, from August to December, I learned the ins and outs of independent publishing. And thank goodness I had been to conferences and met other authors and other independent authors. And they could help with that journey. Because I think if I had to do this all alone, I would still be trying to do it.
Yeah, it's a daunting hill to climb. To say the least.
Let's see. I had 3 websites that, so, you know, doing a website, you know, can take months.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I created one, my web designer created one, and then we shut them both down and we together collaborated and made the website that I have now.
Oh, wow.
But he's also my cover artist, and he developed not only my trademark from my publishing, but he's done several others for other writers. So it's definitely been a...
Hey, thanks for listening to Journey to the Rise. Please do follow us on your podcast app so you have the latest episode downloaded. If you want to follow us on Instagram, our account is Journey to the Rise Podcast. And please remember to be kind to yourself. Fill your cup with love because it makes it easier to be kind to others. This episode was researched, produced, and edited by Girl Boss Productions. I'm Lucretia, and you've been listening to Journey to the Rise.